A video on YouTube leads to the death of a U.S. ambassador.
And a German court declines to court chaos over the EU bailout. Hello, I'm Jeff Horwich.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in New York. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Wednesday, September 12th. The big news of the morning, of course, a U.S. ambassador to Libya was killed. We'll have more on that in a minute.
And new poverty numbers for the U.S. out this morning. And the good news, which is actually probably not so good, is that poverty did not increase in the U.S. It has held steady. We're going to talk with Cornel West, the intellectual and activist who is kicking off a four-state poverty tour today. That and more coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
This podcast is supported by Ting.com. Ting gives you big savings for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator and save $50 on your device purchase at marketplace.ting.com.
The biggest news of the morning worldwide is that the U.S. ambassador to Libya and three other diplomats were killed in protests in Benghazi. Religious extremists stormed the U.S. consulate there. A controversial anti-Islamic video posted on YouTube was the catalyst for the protests and attacks. That has put YouTube and its owner, Google, in kind of an uncomfortable position. From Washington, here's Marketplace's David Gura.
Hours of video are uploaded to YouTube every minute. David Gross used to coordinate international communications policy for the U.S.
Generally, because the volume is so great, they cannot monitor this on a real-time basis. So they wait until people either complain or corporations complain or groups complain about it. Then they look to see if it has violated their terms and conditions, and then they take it down.
Or they don't. It's a very subjective process. Andrew McLaughlin led global public policy at YouTube. He says companies have new power when it comes to speech.
We are living in a very strange era where legal and constitutional free speech protections that we enjoy are always asterisks because they're being implemented by private corporations.
That can make the relationship complicated between the government and companies like YouTube. David Gross says what the U.S. government should do right now is stand up for free speech.
We should not be unduly influenced by the mob actions of others.
A spokesperson for YouTube says that the company won't comment on individual videos, but if flagged content doesn't violate the company's community guidelines, it'll remain on the site. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
Europe's rescue fund got an important boost today. Germany's top court ruled the bailout fund is legal under German law. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard has more.
The German Constitutional Court ruled that Europe's new permanent bailout fund is compatible with the German constitution. That means German taxpayers' cash, tens of billions of dollars worth of it, can be pumped into the fund. The fund would fail without it. So another critical part of the Euro rescue plan is in place. Investors are relieved. But Stephen Lewis of Monuments Security says the Euro is not out of the woods yet.
It's a small cloud that has lifted. There are plenty of others, of course. And there may be further constitutional objections to the proceedings as they unfold in the months ahead.
Later today, the European Commission will reveal details of a planned Eurozone-wide banking union that will ultimately involve a European deposit insurance scheme like the FDIC in the States. And that's likely to provoke another challenge in Germany's constitutional court. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Well, checking the market, Stacey. In Europe, indeed, they seem to have been encouraged. The euro itself rose against the dollar, and European markets
liking that
up
Germany news.
Part. Here in the U.S., at this hour of the morning, nothing. The sound of silence. And that may reflect the fact that here in the U.S., the Federal Reserve Board starts a two-day meeting today. At midday tomorrow, Chairman Ben Bernanke will announce what, if anything, the Fed will do to further juice the economy. Another round of bond buying, maybe, that quantitative easing we talk so much about, seems to be on the table.
And healthcare premiums continue to rise in this country. On average, family plans now cost $15,745 a year, with employees paying around $4,300 of that. That's according to a new report from the Kaiser Family Foundation. The report also found lower-income workers pay higher premiums for less coverage than higher-wage workers.
And one more tidbit for you. Last night, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg gave his most frank and expansive comments, probably since the company's stock offering turned out to be kind of a dud. He was interviewed at a conference hosted by the blog TechCrunch, and he talked a lot about the importance of pleasing Facebook users on mobile devices and making money off of them.
There's a huge opportunity. Now, the question is getting there. And, you know, there's no doubt that some of the stuff that we've had a bunch of missteps on this.
Zuckerberg says all signs now are positive. Mobile Facebook users are growing. They're spending more time on the service. And the company has a handle, finally, on how to advertise to them. So he says. And by the way, Zuckerberg admits he's disappointed in the stock price. Facebook shares are up today, but generally it's been down about 50% from the IPO level.
And Jeff, were you a big Olympics watcher? Are you an Olympics fan?
I did. This year I watched a lot of Olympics.
Did you have any withdrawal? I know my mom actually wrote me several emails about the Olympics withdrawal she was in.
I kind of withdrew from TV altogether after the Olympics. It was very interesting. But it certainly was a change when the Olympics ended.
Well, I have good news for you, Jeff, which is that you can own a piece of the Olympic Games. Okay. An actual piece of the Olympic Games. There's a British website called Remains of the Games, and it's selling everything from the beds and dressers used in the athlete's dorms to crowd barriers and traffic cones, really all things Olympic. Right. Paul Levin runs operations for Remains of the Games, and he joins me now from London. Good morning, Paul.
Yes, hi there. Good morning.
What gave you the idea for this business?
Mainly that originally we set up an internet site for trade buyers, because obviously we're very keen to get a residual value of the stock at the conclusion of the Olympics. And what we found is that all the people around us were desperate to actually buy all sorts of products which we were astonished they were interested in. So, for instance, people wanting to buy dustbins and toilet holders was not something we thought would be terribly appealing. But once they knew it was labeled as part of London 2012, it became magic. And so we were part of the magic.
So tell me, what are some of the more popular items?
I think probably the most popular product of all would be the bean bag. The bean bag is going to travel all the way to Australia, over to the States, all over the world. Then we've got more practical products, such as the office equipment.
How have sales been?
Amazing. That sounds a bit, I don't mean it like that. I'm just truly amazed. You know, we thought we would be able to cope with this by enthusiasm. I've got a fabulous team working with us, all young people starting up in different sections of the business, in social media, internet, PR. They're just rushed off their feet with the excitement and the buzz and the euphoria.
Did you keep anything for yourself?
I would like very much to have a few mementos, but between you and I, if I never see a folding chair again, that wouldn't be a bad thing either.
Paul Levin is the operations controller for the Remains of the Games website. Thank you so much, Paul.
Thank you.
All right, Jeff, well, there is some good news for possession enthusiasts.
Okay, possession as in like possession of pieces of the Olympic Games?
Or no, as in possessed by the devil.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, doesn't come up a lot on Marketplace, but here we are.
I am not one, but for those who are, I guess, some information.
There is a new magazine about exorcism that is hitting the store shelves in Poland. Okay. It's called Exorcista. And apparently it will cover, as any, you know, niche magazine does, topics about the art of exorcism, actually called the art of exorcism, and, you know, profiles of the priests who perform them. Exorcisms have apparently been on the rise in Europe and the U.S., like by a lot. And Exorcista is hoping to tap into that market. The magazine will cost just over $3.
Wow. It's Exorcism Today.
Exorcism Today.
Meet the Exorcist. And kind of like Us Weekly, well, they have an Exorcists. They're just like us.
They're just like
section
us.
Of the magazine.
Shopping.
Like
and yes, that I would love to see.
This podcast is supported by Ting, the new mobile service that makes sense, bringing billing, clarity, usability, and savings to mobile phone users. Ting bills megabytes, minutes, and text messages separately. If you use less than anticipated, the difference is credited at the end of the month. Ting has no premiums or penalties. You don't pay for more than you use. Save $50 on your device at marketplace.ting.com. That's marketplace.ting.com.
New numbers just out this morning from the Census Bureau show 15% of Americans are in poverty, 46 million people. Now, that's good news, if you can call it that, because after 3 years of increases, at least the poverty rate was essentially unchanged. It's no coincidence that today broadcaster Tavis Smiley and activist and academic Cornel West are heading out on what they call Poverty Tour 2.0. They did something similar last year. The tour starts today with a town hall in Cleveland. So as part of our ongoing wealth and poverty coverage, we're glad to have Cornel West here with us. He's a professor emeritus at Princeton and a current professor of philosophy at Union Theological Seminary in New York. Good to talk with you.
It's my dear joy to talk to you, my brother.
Over 4 days, you're headed to four important swing states, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Florida, I believe. What's the message that you intend to share with voters there?
We simply want to accent the humanity and decency of poor people of all colors. We're trying to keep alive the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr., Fannie Lou Hamer. And they said the condition of truth is to allow suffering to speak. And what that means is to make not just poverty as an abstraction, but poor people's lives more and more the center of our public policy. We know that cuts against the grain, but we come from a cut against the grain tradition.
Seems like everybody in both parties are focused rhetorically very much on jobs, 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 right? How is that different than talking about poverty?
Well, one is even when they talk about jobs, we're talking about jobs with a living wage. You know, 60% of the jobs that people talk about these days and end up generating are low-wage jobs, so you end up with the working poor. It ought to be an oxymoron. It's not a matter of trashing the rich. It's a matter of hating injustice, and that's my tradition. I abhor unfairness, and we have to bear witness to it.
It seems to me I heard the Republicans at their convention talk a lot about poverty. All the stories about the single mom struggling to get by and making sure we all have equality of opportunity is a phrase that they used quite a bit. Are you glad for the kind of attention that poverty got in that venue?
Well, I think it was primarily rhetorical. It's one thing to talk about equality of opportunity. It's another thing to be a Republican Party so tied to the wealthy. But in a democracy, you have to talk about public interest and common good. In order to do that, everybody's got to share in not just the prosperity, but also the sacrifice. And I don't hear that from Brother Paul Ryan, God bless him. And I don't hear it from Brother Mitt Romney.
Okay, so a poverty-focused tour of swing states, how is that not just a call to support Obama and other Democrats?
No, because we're very critical of the Democratic Party. Democratic Party is too beholden to the oligarchs, too. We're trying to acknowledge that as Americans, as citizens, as human beings, we can talk about poverty that pushes both parties. Now, it is true that Barack Obama is much better than Mitt Romney when it comes to being concerned about poor people. But at the same time, I've been scathing in my critique of Barack Obama in terms of his Wall Street government that he put in place with Tim Geithner and company.
So give me one example, a policy that is implementable in the near future that's within our grasp, something that you would like to see happen.
We're simply calling for the incumbent of the White House to have a major conference on the eradication of poverty, bring in all the creative minds, left wing, center, and right wing. We can learn much from a variety of different perspectives, but making poor people's lives a priority in the same way we make war in Afghanistan a priority, same way we make prisons a priority, same way we make bailing out banks priority. Treat poor people the way you treat investment bankers on Wall Street.
Cornel West, it's been good to talk with you. Thanks.
Thank you so much. I salute you, Brother Jeff. You do a wonderful job, man.
And Jeff, I know that you are an Android man, but the big tech news of the morning is that Apple is unveiling its iPhone 5 later today.
I had not heard about that.
Yeah, no, me neither.
From 50 people already in the office.
Been anywhere. Here's the thing, though. Last month, a jury ruled that Samsung copied Apple's iPhone and iPad, and Samsung had to pay out more than $1 billion. But in fact, news of that extreme similarity may have helped Samsung's sales. And Marketplace's Queen of Kim has that story for us.
Being a tech reporter, people often call me up for advice.
Well, hi, Queena. It's Dar.
That's Darlene Miller, my mother-in-law. And she was planning to buy an iPad. But after a jury found that Samsung copied Apple, Darlene left this message.
Now that it's come out that Samsung has stolen all the iPad features, what the heck? I might as well just go for the Samsung.
Trip Chowdhury is an analyst with Global Equities Research. He says Darlene isn't the only one who bought Apple's claim that Samsung is just like Apple.
The verdict did raise the visibility of Samsung,
especially for Samsung's Galaxy S3 smartphone. Chowdhury surveyed more than a dozen retailers and found that since the verdict, the Galaxy S3 has been outselling the iPhone. His theory, consumers said,
okay, let's see what this Galaxy S3 is. And when they liked it, they bought it.
Of course, Apple fans have been waiting on the sidelines for a new iPhone. And so the real face-off starts today. I'm Queen of Kim for Marketplace.
So, Stacey, in just a few hours from now, the drum roll, let's begin it now, and we'll end it after a few hours. The iPhone 5
will
come out. Very nice. We don't even know what these things look like, right? What's so special about them until Tim Cook, the Apple CEO, you know, holds the iPhone 5 aloft,
yes,
like Simba in The Lion King, as far as I imagine it, this afternoon in San Francisco, to the usual oohs and ahs from the fanboys and fangirls in the room and around the world.
Apple products, there are people who like them. We're not necessarily fanboys and fangirls.
Well, that's it. Well, you know, Apple fans wear those badges proudly.
I know.
My understanding,
right?
You're a fangirl and proud of it.
It's true.
Yes. Oh, of course, we should say the announcement could be something else. We never know for sure, but of course, everybody thinks this is the new iPhone, right? And the iPhone is an object of desire. People want it for its technical specs, of course, but also because they think it makes a statement about who they are. And our own David Brancaccio, the new host, by the way, of the Marketplace Tech Report, has been looking into other examples of this phenomenon.
Before there was the 5 or the 4GS or the very first iPhone, there was another object of desire.
Back in the mid-1980s, there was this tea kettle that Michael Graves designed.
Ulysses Dietz is chief curator at the Newark Museum in New Jersey.
It was sort of a conical steel tea kettle with a blue plastic handle and a little red bird whistle. And it struck me that that became sort of a national icon, that every kind of young professional couple in the country owned one of those.
Even though the little plastic bird on the thing sometimes caught fire and melted, owners of this pricey kettle were sending the iPhone-like message that they are the sort of people who embrace the design of the future.
It was cutting edge. I know it sounds silly because it's just a tea kettle. I remember that it was referred to in, I think, New York Magazine as yuppie porn.
And we can step back even further. At the Morris Museum, also in New Jersey, is an amazing display of automatic music-making devices that predated the latest iTunes-pumping iPhone by more than a century.
They were the first real instruments that were music on demand.
Kelly McCartney is curator of the collection. She points out a photograph of a family on the Nebraska frontier in 1888 with a stern-looking dad and mom in front of their simple prairie house made of sod. At their feet is an object the size of a bread box, an object the family wants everyone to know they own, a high-tech device known as an organette music box.
It was a highly desirable object and one that a family would probably save up to purchase.
An object that McCartney says would communicate that this was a family with enough disposable income to embrace the technology of what was then the future. Rather like an iPhone 5, wouldn't you say? In Morristown, New Jersey, I'm David Brancaccio for Marketplace.
And David Starts of our sister show, the Marketplace Tech Report, on Monday. If it's carried in your market, you can listen to it on the air. And if not, you can get the podcast from marketplace.org. Finally, Stacey, if you're at all nostalgic for the Apple-Samsung patent battle, first of all, are you? We covered it quite a bit. So
We did. It was an interesting story. I don't know if nostalgia is the word, but sure.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of good dirt. It was very, very, very juicy, and it was a great corporate battle. Well, if you're missing that at all, maybe this will give you your fix. Yoga pants. Yoga pants, baby. Yoga gear maker Lululemon, which I'm not familiar with, but
I am. I have a lot of Lululemon pants.
Okay, well, Lululemon.
I wear them while looking at my Apple iPhone.
Well, you can maybe be on two sides then of winning patent battles. Who knows? Because Lululemon is taking Calvin Klein to court for allegedly ripping off Lululemon's patented Astro Pant. Do you have the Astro Pant?
I think I have the Astro Pant, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Calvin Klein makes a yoga pant that sells for quite a bit less and looks a fair amount like it, I have to say. So that should be an interesting legal battle. You know, this is yoga, but apparently when it comes to patent infringement, that's apparently no excuse to mellow out.
Namaste.
Namaste, indeed. And with the yogarific sign-off, I'm Jeff Horwich.
And I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update.
From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.